Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. As I was mentioning, 13 years ago, of course, we saw and witnessed perhaps one of our most tragic events in our lifetime. Maybe the most tragic event we will ever see, but maybe not. Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering, she has research expertise in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, materials characterization, and materials engineering science. Now, in the time since 9/11, she has applied her expertise to a forensic study of more than 40,000 images, hundreds of video clips, and a large volume of witness testimony pertaining to the destruction of the World Trade Center complex. Her work, Where Did the Towers Go? Judy was on with me about 3 years ago, and here she is back on Coast to Coast on this ominous day. Judy, it's a pleasure to have you back.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
In the 3 years or so that we last had you on, have you seen any new evidence or has anything changed to either continue to back up your theory or to change your mind?
It's not a theory. I deal with evidence. And as I say, you know, if you don't have enough evidence to solve a problem, you can't solve it. You don't have enough evidence. And you don't replace what you don't have with guesses and theories and speculation, because then you're solving an imaginary problem, not the real problem. And you can't solve the real problem if you don't have enough evidence. And so you can, but what evidence you do have, you can go within that. And that's what I've done. And after you collect the evidence and evaluate the evidence to determine what happened, then you go to defining what the destructive mechanism was. And in doing that, you can eliminate the impossible and then retain what's left. It's like you start out with this big circle around everything, and then you can toss stuff out of the circle that is impossible.
Judy, in your work, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. I want you to, for those who, one, didn't hear you with me 3 years ago and are brand new to the program, tell us about this and about your work, and then we'll get into the interview.
Okay, what I did is look at all of the evidence, and starting at the beginning, you know, the issue of how fast the building went away. I don't say collapse. It didn't collapse. It went away. It turned to dust, and, you know.
Pulverized, basically.
And also, it didn't burn up. It didn't slam to the ground, but most of it turned into dust in midair. I know that sounds strange, but you look at the evidence, and that's what you see. All of Manhattan was covered in, you know, ankle-deep dust. And quite, you know, went down the eastern seaboard, went up and away. How do we know that it didn't slam to the ground? Well, the seismic chart doesn't reflect that. There's no S or P wave. Those are the seismic signals that travel through the Earth.
And they should have registered something. Okay.
Yeah, it's like hitting a rock with a hammer. You know, it's like hitting a tuning fork. It should ring. Didn't. There was no detectable S or P waves for any of the five events. You know, the North Tower got a hold, South Tower got a hold, South Tower went away, North Tower went away, then Building 7 went away. For all those five events, there was no S or P waves. But in regular controlled demolitions, you get S waves and P waves and surface waves. Not only that, they calculate the seismic signal, the equivalent Richter scale reading, based on the surface wave. And even the surface waves were so weak that it was equal or less than when they blew up the Seattle King Dome. That was a 2.3 on the Richter scale. The North Tower was a 2.3 and the South Tower was a 2.1. And it should have been a lot more than that. It was equivalent to the bottom, 18 or 20 stories of building.
Judy, there wasn't any concrete, mass concrete from all those levels. It should have been all over the place. Concrete should have been in huge heaps. It was all dust, as you said.
Not just the concrete, but everything. You know, file cabinets, chairs, desks, toilets. Toilets are easy to see, like in a junkyard, remnants of toilets. You know, shiny porcelain surfaces. There wasn't even one recognizable part of one. And there should have been over 3,000.
And I want to point out, by the way, every time we do programs on this, we do get some emails from some people who feel somewhat offended. They feel as if, you know, we're not being patriotic because we're questioning the official version. I want to say this right now. It is healthy to be skeptic. It is healthy to investigate. And I think you really never can take the official version, which is, the, you know, could be the John F. Kennedy assassination with the Warren Report or this report of the 9/11 Commission. You just can't take it at face value. You have to investigate. And, Judy, what was it that you saw that got you to start looking at it and coming up with the conclusions that you came up with?
Well, on that day, you know, we were told this is a collapse. And I grew up without a TV set, and I'm not used to listening to a TV. And if the TV is telling me something that conflicts with what I'm seeing, I just shut off my ears. And what I saw was a building turning into dust in midair, like a, you know, sort of like a bubbler drinking fountain. And it wasn't a building collapsing. And like, this is bizarre, but the grown-ups will take care of it. They'll look into it. I have my job to do. It was, you know, that mentality. But it came clear over the next year or two that nobody was looking into it. The grown-ups weren't going to fix it. Whose job was it to look into it? Not only that, you know, I was thinking very much of the people who died there, and especially the people hanging outside the building from the 105th floor.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I felt like we owe it to them to find out what happened. And I sort of made them a promise that I would find out what happened and tell their story.
Judy, I had Richard Gage on several days ago. Richard Gage, of course, from the 2000 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He doesn't agree with your conclusions. He, and I find this important and fascinating, both of you, of course, don't agree with the official version of what happened that day. But he doesn't believe that a free energy device or technology took those buildings. So react to that.
Yeah, I don't start with the answer and work backwards. I start with, you know, the evidence and then looking at the destructive mechanism. The towers didn't burn up and they didn't slam to the ground, but mostly turned into dust in midair. We know that because the seismic signal was inappropriate for buildings slamming to the ground. Also, the towers were built in this bathtub. It's kind of like a dike that kept out the Hudson River because they were built on bedrock 70, that's 7 times 10, 70 feet below the water table. And if you had two half-million-ton buildings slamming to the ground, you would have ruptured the bathtub. Didn't happen. Also, if they slammed the ground, you see a pile of stuff left over. And actually, when I first started publicly talking about this, I was heavily ridiculed and laughed at. She says that the buildings turned to dust. Isn't that funny? No, all the rubble's there. You know, none of it turned into dust in midair. But that's changing because I've been driving this, you know, for quite a while. So if you look at that, already we can tell that, let's look at types of energy, kinetic energy. That's like a wrecking ball, a missile, a bomb that blows stuff apart. Those would have a seismic signal. They'd also launch chunks at a very fast rate that would slam into adjacent buildings. None of the adjacent buildings looked machine gun fired. Also, the debris would have to go somewhere if you blew up the building. The ground shook with a surface wave for 8 seconds, but it would take 9.5 seconds to drop a bowling ball off the roof to the ground. That's another piece of evidence that says that building didn't slam to the ground. So kinetic energy can be eliminated as a destructive mechanism. We're not talking about the device. We're talking about the mechanism of destruction. You have to first look at the mechanism, the failure mode, so to speak. And let's look at thermal energy, where the building's cooked to death. You know, if they're cooked to death, well, you would have seen some, you know, bright, blinding light if it was high heat. You wouldn't see unburned paper flying all over the place.
No, you would not.
When the dust cloud rolled down the streets, you know, people were trying to outrun it, but they couldn't. And then it just mowed over them and kept on going. It just left them covered with dust. They may have had trouble breathing, but they weren't cooked.
Judy, when we come back, I want you to explain how a directed free energy device or technology works and where they may have been situated if those buildings came down that way. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and of course Dr. Judy Wood, as we talk about her conclusions about the towers and 9/11. Judy, explain how this directed free energy technology works, if you would, where the devices would have to be. Just put it in perspective for us.
Well, again, as I was saying, you first must determine what happened, and then you look at all the evidence, and then you determine what the destructive mechanism was. And you can't solve the problem unless you have enough evidence. So jumping to the answer and coming up with a theory and speculation and so forth is solving an imaginary problem. You have to go be very disciplined. I know it's tough. And the average person, especially in our current educational system, is not geared to doing that. They're geared to jumping to the answer of a multiple choice test. What happens if the correct answer is not one of the choices? So if you start with this very methodical way of going about it, and you can determine as much as you can determine according to the evidence. And what the evidence shows is that you can eliminate kinetic energy as the destructive mechanism. I'm not talking about Acme Model XXX or Model 17 of the Acme Weapon Store. I'm talking about the destructive mechanism. Kinetic energy means that would mean that buildings were beaten to death, like a gravity collapse or wrecking ball or missile or bomb. Thermal energy would mean the buildings were cooked to death, lots of heat. Those two things, the evidence rules out. But directed energy, as I define it, is energy is instructed to do something differently than it normally does. Instead of the bonding forces of matter being attracted to each other, they're directed to repel each other. It's not like something physically hitting it or cooking it. And so within that, it's a big umbrella of things, but it's a... You know, energy is directed somehow to do something differently than it normally does. A lot of people are uncomfortable with that. They want to have a device, you know, an Acme model, whatever.
Yes, that's how we think. I mean, to me,
right.
You know, somebody's in another building up on top of the roof aiming this huge pulse machine at all the World Trade Center buildings and firing away. You're saying, hey, didn't happen like that.
Well, we don't have enough evidence to say that's what happened. But from what the evidence shows, you know, we can define that, and then we can look at parallel evidence that produces the same thing.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Judy, because I want to get a better understanding for this. What you're saying that some kind of directed technology took down the buildings,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, and energy was directed.
Directed. Now, could it have been within the building?
Sure, it could have been anywhere. Wait, I'm going to be careful because, you know, the detractors will say, oh, she said it was within the building.
No, we're just looking at possibilities. Could it have been from a satellite?
It could have been from a variety of places, but here's an example to maybe help you let go of needing to know exactly where it is. Do you have a cell phone?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where the tower is that your cell phone connects to?
I have no idea.
Bingo! You just know that it works.
I know that it works.
And you're within the range.
That's right.
And your cell phone works, and you're within the range of the tower it connects to. You need those two things to make your phone work. And it might be a similar type thing where it's an interference like that of different energies, where you need different components. But for now, it's, you know, nothing touched. Well, here's one of the pieces of evidence. You have a steel beam flying through the air, and it's dissolving as it flies through the air. It's turning into dust, and it's not hitting anything.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I mean, just like it's like a Star Trek thing. It just, poof, it's gone.
Or it's sort of like an Alka-Seltzer tablet effervescing.
Yeah.
And as I say, if people have trouble understanding that, you know, I ask them to look at the picture, and I say, okay, let's say you're going to impersonate that beam.
Could we say, Judy, that it, like, dissolves away, but at a very rapid clip?
Follow along with me here. If you're going to impersonate this beam, and you're going to, okay, so you're going to cover yourself with dust and jump off the top of the building, somebody on the ground isn't going to see that amount of dust coming off of you. Okay, so you grab a couple of bags of flour and start heaving that out on the way down, that still isn't going to account for the amount of dust you see coming out of these steel beams. And pretty soon you realize those steel beams have to be turning into dust in order to do what's getting done. And there's also a video of a steel beam falling with the dust, looks like it overtakes it, and you know that doesn't happen. It's just run out of dust. It's run out of solid. It's completely turned to dust.
It was
and you
gone.
Look at the intersection where it was supposed to land, and there aren't any solid chunks of steel down there.
How big, how much energy would you need if you're going to take down these buildings?
A lot of people like to ask that question. You know, what are the calculations? Well, what are the calculations going to show that the building's there or that it's gone? Just look. Whatever was needed, there was enough. And in order to make calculations, you have to make assumptions. And remember, when you're making assumptions, you're now solving an imaginary problem, not a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's with this unusual problem, the discipline of just staying with what you know that you know that you know, and knowing that that is something separate from what you don't know, and not mixing the two or filling it in with speculation and hypotheses and theories and guesswork. But we can establish what we do know, that, you know, kinetic energy, the building wasn't beaten to death. Thermal energy, rule that out, wasn't cooked to death. And one of the easiest examples of, or piece of evidence of that is the people at the bottom of stairwell B in Tower 1. You know, the cover image of my book that looks like, I call it the bubbler.
Yeah.
You know, in the Midwest, they call drinking fountains, you know, that are constantly going, a bubbler. That's what that looks like. And would you believe, when that picture was taken, there were people in stairwell B, right at the base of that. And they weren't squashed. They weren't beaten to death. They weren't cooked to death. And they thought they were buried under a huge pile of building. And they thought there's no way they're going to get out by the time they could excavate to them. They thought they had 106 stories on top of them. But it turns out that the dust had gone up and blocked out 100% of the sunlight. That's why it was dark. But when the dust cleared, they looked up and saw blue sky.
Now, tell me this, though, Judy. Tell me this. If this is all correct, and some kind of directed energy took these all down, how long do you think they would have needed to have been either pulsing at the building or however?
Wait. You're making assumptions. Again, that's dangerous, because then you're off solving an imaginary problem. If you stick with what you know that you know that you know, this is...
What do we know?
What we do know is that the buildings weren't cooked to death and they weren't beaten to death. So that means the destructive mechanism was not kinetic energy or thermal energy. So bombs blowing up are ruled out.
They found thermite, right? Did they not?
No, they didn't find thermite. They found aluminum powder and iron oxide. Those are some of the ingredients used to make thermite. And, you know, the peer-reviewed paper, they call it peer-reviewed, it was pay for publishing thing, I don't disagree with it, that aluminum powder and iron oxide were found. But guess what? You know what the building was made out of?
What?
This is a steel frame building with aluminum cladding.
Jeez. All right.
So if it's turned to dust, what are you going to find in the dust? But, okay, so if let's say they're going to claim that it was thermite. What's the destructive mechanism? You know, what in that dust baggie connects to what happened to the buildings? If you can't make that connection, you don't go anywhere. And the part in my book that I talked about, I used, instead of thermite, I used chocolate chip cookies. So the buildings were turned to dust. Therefore, the dust would be expected to contain traces of all materials that were in the buildings. Finding traces of chocolate, sugar, and nano wheat flour in the dust would not prove that chocolate chip cookies turned the buildings to dust. It would not prove that these ingredients had been combined as chocolate chip cookies in the buildings, nor would it prove that such cookies were capable of turning building to dust. The same is true for thermite.
Now, there are some people, Judy, who say that planes didn't even hit those buildings. I find preposterous.
Well, the building mostly turned to dust. Can airplanes turn buildings to dust?
No, but people saw planes hit the buildings.
But did the that turn the building to powder in midair?
No, I'm not saying the planes alone may have done it, but I'm saying the planes did hit.
I'm looking at the destructive mechanism. You know, some people say there's fake planes, and some people say there's real planes. Well, fake planes can't turn a building to dust, and neither can real planes. So getting people arguing about planes and no planes or whatever is a distraction away from what happened to the building. And so I'm very focused on what happened to the building. So I don't deal with the planes.
All right, so that's not your area of expertise, basically.
Well, it's I don't also pay attention to what the operator of the technology had for breakfast. It doesn't solve what happened to the buildings. You know, that's a different issue.
There was always talk that Building 7, which apparently wasn't hit by almost with nothing, basically, was pulled. What are we talking about there? Same thing happened?
Yep, same thing. And did you know it wasn't three buildings that were destroyed that day? It wasn't four buildings that were destroyed that day. It wasn't five buildings. It wasn't six buildings. It was seven buildings that were destroyed that day. Building 4 is one that I've become fascinated with at times, where the entire main body of the building went missing. Gone. You know, gone with the wind into powder. I'm not saying, you know, disappeared or vaporized. I'm saying it's not there. You get a lot of powder around. You know, there's some scraps of stuff. But there's also images right below the ground of where that was. It was punched down a little bit into the first layer below ground, but in the parking garage, a few stories below that, you can't even tell anything happened. The lights are still on. There's maybe dustier than usual. But where'd the building go? Building 4. That was a nine-story building, but width-wise, it was, you know, bigger footprint. But it's gone. Building 3, gone except for a little shoebox at one end. Building 6, you know, someone today wrote me and said, and was saying it was like a jack-o'-lantern, all carved out in the middle. Building 5 had these cylindrical holes in it. There's, you know, Building 7, it had all this stuff pouring out of it all afternoon for about 7 hours. A lot of material. And then when it went away, it made a 0.6 on the Richter scale. That's like a jackhammer.
Well, it sure is. How much energy, Judy, do you think was needed to destroy these buildings?
It could even be negative energy. If you can understand the mechanism, that's what the beauty of this is. If there's a silver lining in this, it's that this technology was used for destructive purposes, but it doesn't have to be. It could be used for good purposes, for providing free energy to the world. If you have the ability to affect, you know, the nature of matter, instead of having atoms attract each other, they're repelling each other. So if you just give it that instruction, it isn't like you have to put in a whole lot of bombs and a lot of energy that way. It could be the energy comes from the material. And actually, the dust cloud that rolled down the street, first responders that I talked to said it was cooler than ambient temperature. Not only was it not hot, it was cooler. And then it started feeling warm because, you know, when you put acid on your hands, it feels like it's burning up, but it could be room temperature. There was something in the dust that was eating on their skin. And they just couldn't, like, they're scrubbing off in the shower afterwards, just couldn't get it out. It was interesting.
So what would happen, Judy, I don't want to get morbid here, but if a human being is in that building and gets hit with this directed energy, what happens to the human? Is the human pulverized too?
I want to get away from the idea of, you know, a point-and-shoot laser beam. It's more of a field effect, like the coverage range of your cell phone. You know, it's a zone of effect. But remember the people who left the building early? They've been referred to as jumpers. I don't think they voluntarily jumped. But they somehow found themselves, you know, getting away from something, and they ended up out the window. And weird other things were happening in the building. Like one woman called her husband and said, we're going to start down the stairs. And got, you know, wet T-shirt wrapped around the head, and we'll call you on cell phone when we get to the bottom. And two or three stories later, she went out the window.
Do you ever get Dr. Wood into the WHO?
No, but I got about as close as I got closer than anybody has in the public domain. That is, I pretty much know who knows, and that's who I try to take to court.
And tell me about that.
These were contractors on the NIST report, National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Right.
And they were mandated by Congress to determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Okay.
They didn't do that. And I wrote a request for correction to NIST saying, you know, the contractors were leading them astray. And you know, we can't sue a government agency, but we can sue contractors for fraud of a government agency. And there's a couple of the contractors, and one in particular, that had the most number of people on the contract, on the NIST report. They are developers and manufacturers of energy weapons.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Not only that, they also had, and still have, I believe, contract with the U.S. government to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that exists or is being developed anywhere. So not only do they know what technology it is, but they know whose technology it is. Wouldn't it have been nice to have them under oath?
What happened to the suit?
See, the lower court judge dismissed it, saying he wasn't going to hear a case about who shot JFK or what landed on the moon.
Oh.
Excuse me, sir. Did you read the... This isn't about that. Did you get confused? Which...
Yeah, not that
okay,
case.
So we appeal it, and those... There's three judges in the Court of Appeals. They were very respectful. But see, while working on the case, I couldn't talk about it and couldn't advertise it. And there was a kind of a clamp down on anybody else talking about it. Not legally, but, you know, those who didn't want this case to go forward were keeping everybody else from knowing about it. But there was only like five of us or six of us, you know, count them on one hand, who supported this case. Now, if you're those judges, what would you do? And what those judges did, and they're very respectful of me in doing this, they wrote in the written decision, they acknowledged the law applied to this case, but they're ignoring the law and dismissed the case.
Absolutely riveting, Judy. I've got to tell you, as so many people have all their different theories, this one is very frightening.
It's not a theory. It's not a theory. It's,
I know what I know. I know the way you feel about that, but a lot of people believe that. They a lot of people do call it a theory, don't they?
Because that's what they're used to doing, is just, you know, what someone says, oh, that's a theory. And is 2 plus 3 equal to 5? Is that a theory?
Shouldn't be.
If I were to know your height, I would start with a tape measure, not a theory. What I'm reporting here is basically that, is evidence that anyone can observe. If they look in my book, I don't tell people what to think.
Let me ask you this, and we're coming up to the break, so I may have to ask you next hour, but why do you not accept the theory or conclusion of gauging the architects?
He doesn't present evidence. He presents theories. It is a theory.
Okay, and, but could you, you know, I asked, how in the heck could you put explosives in these buildings and nobody see it?
Yeah, you go into work one morning and the ball's missing because somebody's putting something in there and somebody doesn't notice. But not only that, is how do you detonate it? Is one of the parts of my book. I showed, just to remind people, I showed pictures of these signs you see at the side of the road saying, blasting zone ahead, turn off cell phones and two-way radios. Okay, how do you do that for Manhattan for 6 months?
Yeah, you can't. Judy, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. Dr. Judy Wood with us. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back.
The free Coast Zone email newsletter is sent out 6 days a week and is a great way to keep up on all
the Coast AM. If you have an opposing view to tonight's program, we invite you to contact us. Please email your comments to webmaster@coasttocoastam.com.
All sorts of strange things happening. There's also various ways of showing that the building turned out it's all consistent. Like, for example, the building went away in 8 seconds. The ground, you know, only shook for 8 seconds. But it takes 9.5 seconds for dropping a bowling ball off the roof to hit the ground. The only way that could happen is if the building didn't slam to the ground. As well as the tipping top of Tower 2, it looks like it stops tipping. And it looks like it violates the laws of conservation of angular momentum. If it was a rigid body, that would be true. But what that does is prove that it doesn't remain a rigid body. Think of, you know, the top part, the tipping part, turning into little specks of dust that can keep rotating in place. So it can it can maintain conservation of angular momentum. Just the whole thing doesn't keep rotating. You see it turn and then it stops twisting. So there's you know, quite a few different aspects of that, as well as the first responder testimony. You know, the building turning to dust, and there's various ones that say, hey, you know, this is not smoke, you can breathe. Firefighters know that in smoke, you know, it displaces the oxygen, you can't breathe.
You can't breathe, that's right.
But these guys could breathe. They stick their face in the armpit of their shirt so they can use their shirt as an air filter to block out the dust, but it was oxygen in that air.
I mean, it looked like that day, it looked like volcanic ash falling down on everybody, didn't it?
Right, yeah. And it was just, you know, ankle deep for blocks and blocks. It was a tremendous amount of dust. And it was all very, very fine. And you're talking about, you know, the people in the building. Well, you know, the people left the building early, referred to as jumpers. It was estimated that there were... you know, 3 or 4 people per face per minute coming out of Tower 1.
Just so jumping out, yeah.
Yeah, so let's say take the load number. Let's say 3 per face. There's 4 faces. That's 12 people a minute.
Oh.
Times 100 minutes, that's 1,200 people.
Sad, sad, sad.
Add to that the 343 firefighters.
That's right.
And you're up to 1,543. Right, and so you basically have about 1,600, and that's all the number of people that have been identified.
Yeah, and then the sad people on the plane, of course.
Right, so basically, you know, the people who left the building early were the ones that they have DNA that's identifiable. In the building, no traces. And the various dust studies, if the particulate that's rising up, it had organic components to it. The stuff was so fine, it was about 1/100th of the size of red blood cells.
That's a good point.
And that's, you know, the size of DNA. And it gets inhaled right into the bloodstream. It may even go across the blood-brain barrier. But that's definitely going to make people sick. But you can't get stuff that fine with a hammer banging against a rock.
No, there's no way. Judy, was this Tesla technology?
I don't know what this was, but I can look at parallel evidence that reproduces the very same things, as well as, you know, natural occurring things like tornadoes. Tornadoes produce very similar things, including, you know, what appears to be lightning or say almost fire, you know, up the middle. But, of course, you know, I can't, at least I don't know how to go back in time to visit Nikola Tesla.
But, all right.
Somebody that lives in the here and now that can reproduce it was John Hutchison, and I went to watch him reproduce it.
The Hutchison effect.
Yes, and it's got all the same characteristics.
You're right about that. Let's go to Ron in Tampa, Florida. Ron, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for doing this subject. I know we're being lied to about 9/11, but the problem I see with Dr. Woods' theory is there had to be explosions in all 3 buildings. You hear so many accounts from the firefighters, but janitor in the North Tower said he heard an explosion in the basement before the plane hit the building. You see what looks like cannons shooting out the sides of the building, you know, dust and the steel beams flying out. And if you look at the top of Building 7, right when it's first starting to collapse, you'll see the 2 sides of the top of the building going down in a V-shaped formation. The top starts to collapse in the middle. It just, the whole Building 7 just splits down the middle, you know, like taking a knife coming right down through it. That's a controlled demolition. They run explosion somewhere in the middle of a building, and a building just falls in on itself.
That, yeah, I appreciate your belief in that, because it appears that way from just a glance. And let's look at a different scenario. People go to a magic show, and they see a magician pull a rabbit out of a cufflink of a shirt. Does that mean he did, just because it looked like it? Or, you know, David Copperfield disappeared a freight train and disappeared the Statue of Liberty. Because something appears a certain way, you need more evidence to that. You couldn't take somebody to court based on it looks like. You need more evidence. If it was a controlled demolition, it was slammed to the ground, you'd have seismic signals. If it slammed to the ground, you'd see a pile of stuff. If it slammed to the ground, you'd rupture the bathtub. None of those things happened.
Judy, what has your conclusions done to your career, to yourself, your book, Where Did the Towers Go? I mean, have you been under fire? Have you been accepted? What has happened?
I've had many engineers who have written to me who wouldn't want to come out of the and get shot at themselves, but they are so glad that I'm standing forth, and they say, just know that we're behind you. I also get various, threats and insults and name-calling, and I realize that's the best that those people can do. But as for, the sound of explosions, I covered that in my book. Here's a pretty interesting one. One says, his boss asks him, it says, we're walking down. I realize we only have two people. I saw my vehicle. The seats were covered. I still have my bag. I hold it like a trophy, like people collect basketballs. I haven't touched whatever the force was. It was so strong it went inside the bag. That sounds interesting. And so, but we were there. Vehicle 219 was destroyed. And his boss says, was it on fire? And he answers, what? Boss, was it on fire? And he answers, fire? We saw the sucker blow up. We heard a boom.
Yeah.
And this is an emergency medical vehicle, just spontaneous combustion. And here's another one. I'll just jump to a particular part. It says this huge ambulance must have had Scott bottles or oxygen bottles on it. These were going off. You hear a boom, and they're all exploding. Another one says the Scott cylinders and oxygen cylinders were all letting go. You'd hear them all blowing up left and right. Yeah, this is at street level. The Scott bottles, those are the air tanks that the firefighters wear so they can breathe clean air when they're in oxygen, when they're in a smoky environment. Why were those exploding at street level? Why were vehicles, appearing to go into spontaneous combustion? Did they put thermite in the Scott packs? I don't think so. So there was a sound of explosions. Things do go boom. Put an egg in your microwave. It'll go boom.
It sure will. Now, Judy, is this something you worked on by yourself, or did you have assistance with other engineers?
I pretty much worked on it by myself, but I've had other engineers who have read through it when I finished it. And other ones, and also Professor Eric Larson, who also read through it and helped me with some wording of some things. And, helped me make it more smooth for reading. And there are other people who were just invaluable in helping with this. Thanks for bringing that up. Russ Gerst, Andrew Johnson, Jerry Liebhart, my lawyer. These people, Frank Ferguson, these people have been just so helpful that I couldn't have done it without them, including Morgan Reynolds. I'll put him at the top of the list because I wouldn't have gotten anywhere if he hadn't helped me get going. But so there's a handful of people who, are just vital to, if nothing else, running defense.
Back to some more calls for you. David's in New York, first-time caller. David, go ahead. You're on the program with us.
Yeah, hi. I was just wanted to comment on the free energy for a moment.
Sure.
I'm a photographer as a hobby, and at night, I've been taking some sky pictures, and I realized that I've actually caught on video what is basically a spherical shape where it looks like there's waves of energy rolling around it. And then just as a coincidence, I was packing up my gear leaving in the morning, just after sunrise, and right from the same spot, I don't know if it was the same thing or not, but right from the same spot, what looks like a plane starts to fly across the sky. At, I mean, within 30 seconds, it went from horizon to horizon. I don't know if the two were related or not, but is and when you say that you saw out of the building things coming out of the windows for hours afterwards, I assumed that you were talking about the free energy that was...
No, I was talking about the people who left the building early, that, you know, while the building was standing, there were people who went out of the building.
Before whatever
before the building went away. After the building went away, there's the, you know, the stuff is still breaking down and fuming from the ground up. But, yeah, keep being observant. That's very good. Just keep observing things. See what's there, not what you think you're supposed to see is there, but just observe what is actually there.
Whatever was used, I assume it was silent, probably no noise, right?
Right. You know, here's a contrast with, you know, the bombs. There were things that exploded. There's also a lot of water tanks in the building. You know, they can't pump the water all the way up the top. They have to pump it up in stages from tank to tank to tank.
Tank to tank, yeah, you're right.
And what if those tanks start, you know, deteriorating and, you know, losing their strength, at some point they're going to rupture. And they're going to squirt water out. So that's just something that you would expect to see. But let me read another quote from a first responder.
Sure.
This is Michael Ober. He says, "I don't remember the sound of the building hitting the ground. Someone told me it was measured on the Richter scale. I don't know how true that is. If the building's hitting the ground that hard, how do I not remember the sound of it?"
It should be deafening.
Right. It should sound like it was raining dump trucks. And there's, like, when Building 7 went away, they were interviewing some woman, and Building 7 was behind her. And the photographer, or interviewer, I don't know which, you hear the voice saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa," and they see the building going down. You don't hear any bang, bang, bang. You don't hear a crunchity, poppity, bambi, bangity, boom.
Well, you know, Building... Judy, that was a day of chaos. So many people were in shock. You had so many responders out there, firemen, policemen, EMTs, running around doing what they're doing. Many of them lost their lives. I guess in that kind of chaos, you don't stop to think if you're hearing something or what.
Well, this is the recordings. You know, somebody who's...
Yeah.
This is broadcast on the news. I've seen it.
After the fact.
You know, the photographer, the building's like dropping down. It gets halfway down towards the ground. The guy's going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa." He doesn't know what else to say. And because the woman who's being interviewed is behind her, so she doesn't see it. She's not at all reacting to it.
Yeah, he's looking at it. And
yeah.
That's a good point. Let's go to Larry, truck driving in Virginia, east of the Rockies. Larry, thank you. You're up with us.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Sure thing, Larry.
Judy?
Hey.
I'd like to thank you for your evidence that you've posted up on your website. But the weapon system you're talking about is very unique. It also produces a very unique evidence, which you got documented. I got a picture of a V-22 Osprey hovering next to the twin tires on 9/11. It has an onboard directed energy anti-missile defense system based on the technology of wormholes and curved space. It has the firepower to do all the damage you've seen it do on 9/11. And these same V-22 Ospreys are in action in Iraq right now as I'm speaking. So in the end, you're going to win in this game you play here. You're going to come out on top. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for calling in.
Judy, I assume you don't get involved in the politics of the aftermath of 9/11. What has happened, Homeland Security, Patriot Act. You don't touch that, do you?
Not a whole lot, but what I have also come to notice is, you know, patterns of behavior. Like what, and the nature of humans, the nature of animals, the animal instinct. And there's something important, and I'm so glad you brought this up, that I'd like listeners to realize that it hit me on 9/11. One of the faculty members in my department said, "Yeah, after the cold bombing, we got to go take them out. We got to take them all out." And mentally, he had in his hand a pitchfork, and he'd go after the bad guy. And I realized that when people are in revenge mode, they shut off all logical thinking. That's what animals do. That's how they get dogs to fight to the death. When they're going at it, they just shut off logical thinking, whether it's fear mode or revenge mode. So when it then came to, oh, it's the Bush administration, it's Cheney, it's this, it's that, same thing. Doesn't matter. If you're in revenge mode, you're shutting off logical thinking. So you replace Bin Laden with Bush or with, you know, ISIS, whatever you want. It's bringing up that same kind of response, and you better say, whoa, it's time to pause and reflect. Let's look at the evidence and work carefully and patiently and take care of ourselves first and then worry about what to do about what happened. But don't be quick to, you know, grab the pitchfork and go after. And I've also noticed that every year around 9/11, you know, 9/11 was an attack on human consciousness. It shut down logical thinking because of that. And then if you give it a booster shot every year at this time, it keeps it going. And so I've noticed that, you know, working up to 9/11, you see all this stuff happening. You know, throw your TV out the window. That's what Richard Hall says, a fellow in England. You know, if you're finding yourself worked up, throw your TV out the window. It's just working up. And it shuts off logical thinking. And that's a very important thing to understand.
We're going to come back in a moment with Dr. Judy Wood. We're going to take final phone calls with her. Her book, of course, Where Did the Towers Go? Her websites are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Very controversial subject, of course, with all the different conclusions that the experts who've been on this program since 13 years ago, and all of them just simply want to try to get to the bottom of this, the truth. What happened on that day? Why did it happen the way it did? So they're all out there trying to get to the truth, and Dr. Judy Wood is one of them. We'll come back with her and you on Coast to Coast AM.
Coast Insider.
George Norrie back with you, Dr. Judy Wood as well. Judy, would you welcome a new 9/11 investigation of which you could bring forth some of your evidence?
Oh, there is already a new 9/11 investigation that has been conducted. Who would be conducting yet another new one?
Well, I'm talking about an official one by Congress.
Oh, to get a, well, just make a Xerox of the one that's already there, and that's what, you know, that's what you'd have.
You don't trust them, do you?
Well, you know, who's going to do a new investigation? Engineers and architects? Okay. If engineers do such investigations, why don't you ask Richard Gage why he's calling for a new investigation instead of doing one? Are they not capable of doing one? You know, there has been one that has been conducted, and no one has refuted it. I would like to see someone, you know, find an error in my book and state what that error is and which page it is.
I mean, you're open to debate, aren't you?
Yeah, you don't find the truth through debate. You find it through looking at evidence. There's no, you know, truth doesn't have sides, and the truth is unifying. And so if people are interested in determining what happened, well, they shouldn't be trying to push a political campaign of an idea or a theory or emotions. It's about evidence. And what I've been talking about tonight is, you know, just how you start. We didn't get off ground zero, no pun intended, but you know, let's look at the destructive mechanism. Is it kinetic energy? Is it thermal energy? Or is it directed energy? As I define directed energy, being energy is directed somehow to do something differently than it normally does.
Could it be all of the above?
Nope. As we already talked about earlier tonight, is that the evidence rules out kinetic energy. The buildings were not beaten to death. The evidence rules out thermal energy. The buildings were not cooked to death. So that means any device falling underneath those categories is ruled out. It's impossible to have been used to produce what got done.
Do you have any?
How can you use have bombs blowing up without shaking the ground anywhere? It just doesn't work. And if, you know, there's people who also claim that nukes happened. Remember when the Chernobyl plant blew up? you could measure it, the fallout all around the globe.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And so you couldn't have kept that a secret. People all over the globe would have, you know.
And I'm sure it still reads, you know, if you took a radiation detector out there.
Right. And when people do weapons testing, other countries can sense it. They have sensors that sense the seismic effects as well as other things. This is like the buildings just turned to dust in place. It affected the Earth's magnetic field at the same time. Also, there's other things. There's a whole long list of evidence that doesn't get discussed. You know, the toasted cars, the cars that appear to go into spontaneous combustion. I say toast as in their history. They're toast. You know, cars in this parking lot a block or two away from the towers just lit up. And you have all sorts of first responders running down the street, you know, because total blackout because the dust went up and blacked out the sun. They couldn't see where they're going. And they said, thank goodness the car started lighting up because then I could see where I was going. And one EMT had her turnout coat light up, and she became a human flashlight. Weird things like that going on that are not explained by bombs and, you know, 19th century technology. There's something else going on. There's a lot of first responders that talk about experiencing what they thought was like a tornado. And there's one EMT, this is a really interesting one, that dove under an emergency medical vehicle, and he thought he was a goner. He thought he was buried. But when the dust cleared, he looked up and saw blue sky. The vehicle was gone. He didn't remember it rolling off of him. It was just gone. There was strange things like that that happened. There were people exploding. You know, why did so many people come out of the building? Firefighters had never seen anything like that before. And this one guy said, you know, 20 years of being on the force, he'd only seen one person jump, and that's from the second floor into a net. It was, you know, it was like raining people is what they said. So you start out and you look at what you know. And if somebody's really interested in the truth, they would be interested in, you know, if somebody can't handle what I'm saying here, then they don't want a new investigation. A scientific investigation. I have over 30 years of experience doing forensic engineering and science. That's my area of expertise. It's like saying, okay, we don't need to have somebody with a medical background. Here, do this heart transplant. No, it's not going to work. This is what I've trained to do my whole life.
You sure have. Let's take some final calls.
I'm very disciplined at looking at just the evidence of what happened. You can't argue about that. It's evidence. You know, are the buildings still there or are they gone? That's not a theory. I've been there. I've been there beforehand when they were there, been there afterwards and they're gone. So that's you know, a fact that they're gone. And various other things that determine what you know that you know that you know. Let the evidence lead to the conclusions and not let the conclusions color the evidence.
Peter is truck driving in California. Go ahead, Peter, west of the Rockies.
Oh, right.
Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I don't even know where to start now. I was going to ask her if the buildings were pulverized that bad, why did it take 2 years to haul it off one dumb truck at a time?
The bathtub was cleaned out by May. It was it was cleaned out faster than they thought it would be. But they would also truck in dirt, dump it down, stir it around, take it out, bring in more dirt, dump it down. Stir. You know, I was there in 2007. Dirt was still coming in and out. There's an ongoing reaction, non-self-quenching, that term comes to mind, but that's a whole different set of data there. But looking at, you know, what happened, now the buildings weren't pulverized, that's a close word. I use the word dustify. We saw a process we've never seen before, so we don't have a word for it. Pulverize is a mechanical action. It's, you know, from kinetic energy, pounding rocks on rocks, that type of thing. Thermal energy vaporizes something. That doesn't apply either because that implies high heat. The buildings turn to dust in midair. So I'm calling that dustification. I think it's pretty clear what it means. And by definition, it means whatever it was that happened to the towers. You know, like the toasted cars and all. So it's important just to know what it is that you know that you know that you know, and know that everything else you don't know, and don't fill in that gap with guesses and assumptions, because then you're solving an assumed problem, not the real problem.
Now, they did have some huge pieces of steel, though, that they hauled off very fast. They didn't keep it. They didn't investigate it. It was a crime scene. But not everything was dust.
Oh, right. Not 100% of the building. There was steel there, but not 110 stories worth. In times two buildings.
No, I agree with that. That's true.
Yeah. So it wasn't anything like that. That's another, kind of straw man that people say, oh, here's a piece of steel, so she's wrong. I'm not saying that 100% of the steel turned to dust. I'm saying the majority of the building, let's say from the 20th story on up, or just to make sure the detractors, stay under control, say 50% of the building is, turned to dust. But this other issue of all the steel shipped to China, I've yet to see a receipt. Was it shipped before noon? Because I have pictures that were taken before noon on 9/11 where the material's already missing.
Oh, yeah. They did get rid of a lot of stuff pretty darn fast.
Could they move it out in 2 hours or an hour and a half?
Probably not.
Right. And it was gone by then. And then came the story that was shipped to China. And that was to explain why there wasn't enough material there.
Mm-hmm.
But the material was gone before the dust cloud blew away. And you could see that there wasn't much left. So
let's go next.
Okay.
Let's take some more for you. They're all lining up. North Carolina we go. Pete, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. What a wonderful show. It's a good person's program. I appreciate the doctor's efforts. Listen, the Nazis in the Third Reich, they weren't getting the traction they needed, so they destroyed the Reichstag. You remember the Reichstag fire? History repeats itself. Then they took off. They had control of Germany, and I really think this is why these buildings, they've got enough brass to knock down Building 7 that wasn't hit by anything. And I appreciate what you guys are doing. Let me get off here. You got more callers. Thanks much.
Well, thank you. Thanks. I'm a forensic scientist. I look at, what happened with the material properties. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't look at theories, and I don't look at conspiracies, and so I don't look at conspiracy theories. I look at physical evidence, whether it's about, Boeing looking for a new design of an airplane wing or somebody designing a new truck bed. I look at material properties and materials characterization of what's there.
We go to Angie now in Casa Grande, Arizona. Angie, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Judy Wood.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call. How
sure
are you doing, Judy?
Hi, Angie.
Hi. I just have a couple of comments. They're kind of various, but on the topic we're talking about right now. The other night I listened to a program when you had a guest host filling in for you. I believe her name was it Lisa?
Oh, that's on our weekend show. Yeah, Lisa Gar.
Yes. And she had a wonderful host, and I realized then how much physics I really knew. And man, was I horrible in math in school my whole life, except geometry. And then I realized I could have actually done physics because this guy was amazing, and he was a scientist from Egypt. And for 40 years, he had delved into bioenergy and biosacred energy, and was discussing the fact that regarding the pyramids and whatnot, and that it's not so much what you built, it's where you built it and a sacred energy around it. And the fact that when you guys were talking about the cell phone towers and all that stuff, and there was something going on somewhere in New Zealand where there were cell phone towers and they added more and they had to put them in the church of all locations. And for all this time, everybody there, these kids, people weren't being able to conceive. There was a woman with three kids that had epilepsy, which I happen to have. I have the worst epilepsy you can have. And this woman was taking care of five kids that had an average of 5 grand mal seizures a day, people with massive headaches, so on and so forth. And so a friend of his called down to Egypt and said, hey, they told them they knew a guy and they wanted you to come out and check this place out. Now, this kind of guy in sacred energy, they deal with quantitative type things. And he was trying to give her examples with, like, musical notes, and you strike a chord, and then you put your finger on another chord. And basically, in math, it's an infinity amount of possibilities, right? And she couldn't get the first example with music. He said, okay, well, I'm an engineer, I'm an architect, and I can create anything. But, you know, you gotta put it in a place, and, you know, they use shapes and things and whatnot to make it, you know, your own. And so it creates peace and everything in your life, and also healthy and all these types of things. And so he went up there, and he asked permission to go in the church because people were starting to not go to church because their heads started hurting and things like that. So he went in there with the permission of the church, and he took out his stuff, and he tried to do wood on these cell phone towers. Obviously, that wasn't working. And I knew before he was going to say it, I said, watch, he's going to go in there, and all he's going to do is redirect that energy somewhere else. And that's exactly what he did. He used plexiglass. And they do have, like, different formations, like triangular and things like that are going
on. Oh, yeah, they are way ahead, Angie, of just about anything. And this technology, Judy, who do you think possesses it? Now, that's an interesting question. Who has it?
You mean the technology that's, you know, Acme Model XXX available from aisle 17 at the Acme Weapons Store? You know, what... You're jumping way, 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 way ahead. I'm not talking about theories. I'm talking about evidence of what...
No,
you know,
but I'm saying, who has it? Who has it? That's my question.
Hey, ask Applied Research Associates. I can tell
Chinese,
you. Can tell you.
Do the Chinese have it? Do the Russians have it?
Ask Applied Research Associates.
Are they the only ones who know?
They're ones I you know, have pretty good evidence that they know who has it. That's their job, to know who has it. They're paid by our tax dollars to know.
Did you ever call them?
They were, you know, called to the stand, but then the case was killed.
Well, I mean, you've never gone to their offices or called them wherever may be.
No.
Where are they based?
I had contacted various other, you know, various offices around, some in Florida and some in Vermont and other places, but that's neither here nor there. We're talking about the evidence of what happened. No one can refute what I have presented. What they have is emotional attachments to ideas and theories and speculation and are unable to look at evidence, partly because of maybe our educational system, that people begin with theories and work backwards. You know, they look at the answer in the back of the book and work backwards. But why would somebody have a problem with looking at the evidence that I present?
Oh, I don't think anybody should have a problem at looking at what you present. They don't have to agree with it, but they should at least look at it.
Do you agree that the towers are gone, or is that somebody's wacky theory?
Are we being silly or what now?
No. The evidence I present is that clear. It's not a theory. It's not imagination. Are the towers gone? You know, and then you look at the seismic signal from a whole bunch of different seismic stations. Is there a lack of appropriate seismic signal? Is there high heat? There wasn't high heat. Thermal energy didn't destroy the buildings. We're talking about destructive mechanism, not what did it. We're talking about the destructive mechanism. Was it kinetic energy? Was it thermal energy? You know, people have often said, oh, she talks about laser beams from outer space. No, that would be thermal energy as a destructive mechanism. We'd be cooking the building to death. It didn't get cooked to death, so we can eliminate thermal energy.
Regardless of the conclusions you've gotten here, have you ever asked yourself, why did they do this?
I don't speculate, but I can look at what's happened since. And that's when it's become, you know, kind of obvious. People are, you know, utterly traumatized. It was an attack on human consciousness. People shut down the ability to think. I saw that in my colleagues. And
people gave up a lot of rights, too.
That's right. And it numbs the senses, and they allow that kind of thing to happen. And the only way to heal from that is to face what happened. Not to just say, okay, instead of Bin Laden, let's go after Bush. Or let's go after Cheney. Or let's go after, they're not dealing with what the problem is. And how you begin with is you can look at the evidence and see, are the towers gone? And to see that 7 buildings were destroyed that day. Not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, 7. And they basically went missing. But you had people like, you know, right standing next to it. Like in Building 6, there were some firefighters walking through the lobby when the middle went. And one guy lived and his buddies were gone.
Well, will we ever get the real answers? Judy, thank you so much for being on the program. Dr. Judy Woods, up next, a 3,000-year-old mystery. What does that mean to us?